Well, you met at the airport.
Yes.
Well, no, it
was just strangers who welcomed us in the reception area. But then they took us to a room where there were lots of coats that were actually donated by the community, and gloves and hats, and it was cold. It was jolly cold. So they gave us a choice, you know, pick a coat out. So I picked my first pink coat.
I'm assuming the flight was full of people fleeing as well. So,
oh, it was full.
So you were expected to be, or all the Ugandans were expected to be arriving at Stansted, so they were ready and prepared.
Oh, absolutely. It was military style organised. And they expected us because immigration had to be done and all that. Mm. So it was very well done. Very kind people met us at the airport and looked after us. But we were waiting in the reception to see what's going to happen next because we didn't know anybody. But we had faith in the British government. You know, in those days, having worked under the British administration, my parents did, because Uganda got independence in 1962. Mm. So they'd worked a long time under the British. They knew that there was a system. They'd worked under a system, there was a discipline, there was some form of order. And my father was very much, and my mother, knowing that things will happen, something will happen. So, and then we had all these prophecies given to us, so we were very encouraged by that. And we were sitting in the reception, and on the tannoy comes this message: is the Hamilton Solanke family on this flight? Please come to the reception. My father goes, I don't know anybody here apart from the Arnolds and my nephew. So he goes to the reception and he said, there's somebody here to meet you. And my father goes, really? And he said, yes, a gentleman called Peter Hill. And we couldn't believe it. Peter Hill used to be a congregational member in Uganda, in our church. And he knew the Arnolds here. And the Arnolds had sent him all that week, because they had said, sometime during this week, they're coming. So please go. So he'd come every day with a 10-seater van to pick us up. Do you know, if God's hand was there, it was there. It was evident that he was guiding us. And that, I think, spoke so much to us as a family, that we are not alone in this. We are not alone in this. So we took our one suitcase and £50 in my father's pocket for us all. We were taken to a vicarage in Kensington, where John Kidd, who was one of our pastors in Uganda, because we had a rotation, you know, they were there for 3 years and left. Mm-hmm. They had another 3 years and left. So John Kidd was one of them, and he was a pastor here in Kensington, and we stayed with him for a week. And then Kathleen Arnold came to pick us up after a week and brought us to Sevenoaks. And we stayed in her house for a month, during which time my schooling was sorted, and I went to a boarding school in Sussex. And my parents lived with her for a month, and my aunt did as well. My brother and his family were housed with another family who had children, so they could communicate, you know, with the Salters in Sevenoaks. And the St. Nicholas Church family, where Kathleen and Edward Arnold worshipped, that community prepared a home for us in Sevenoaks.
Oh my.
And I call her Auntie Kath and Uncle Edward. So Auntie Kath, she invested some of the money that she had, and with the help of London City Mission, bought this house.
One where we're in right now.
Yeah, we're in now.
Oh, wow.
this is the home I came to 50 years ago. It was much smaller. And then in 1981, I bought it when I got married and released her of her obligation. And I'm here.
So you arrive when you're 15. Everything's new.
Yes.
What happened around, you know, what were your feelings and thoughts and settling in? You've been helped a lot by the church. How were you feeling sort of emotionally? What about connections, social life? Because you had all of these wonderful things and your parents were working, obviously, in Uganda. So how did, like, life and family dynamic change, and what sort of feelings and emotions were accompanied by that when you sort of landed here in Sevenoaks in 1972?
For my parents, I would say that the first thing was that they couldn't get the vegetables that they were so used to. So that's like, how are you going to feed the family? You know, we only get cabbages and cauliflowers and potatoes and swede and things like that. So, but people were so kind. We had a local butcher and we had a local greengrocer and we had a local post office. And this home was bought strategically so that my parents could walk down, because it was all in the village.
Mm.
So they could walk down to different places. And fantastically, Aunt Kath, because she was a missionary in Sudan for quite a few years, she knew how to adjust people. So she took my aunt and my mum and my father and introduced them to everybody in the community. So all the shops knew us,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they were so kind and wanting to help us, really. So that was an easy part. But then my parents, my father and my brother spoke to some friends who they knew,
mm-hmm.
who were here, and they said, oh, you will get your vegetables in Liverpool Street, mm-hmm. in London. So then once a month they used to go to Liverpool Street to get the Indian food, which then was like, oh, hallelujah.
And what about things like school? So you went to, you said you went to
boarding school
when you were 15?
So I'd never been separated from my parents and I had to go. It was a huge challenge, but it was also something that this house I live in now is larger than what it was. And we all couldn't have fitted in it.
Mm-hmm.
So to put us in a boarding school was a practical thing as well. Mm-hmm. And when
just,
I went
just yourself,
there,
or did you go
my,
with
my cousin?
And Nina went
two
with
of
you.
Us, yes. It was a big, 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 big shock because I was thrown into this very English boarding school.
Mm.
But I had a friend from Uganda. So Mona Whiting was a friend who went to the same school, and that's why I was put there,
mm-hmm.
Because the Arnolds knew her and her mm-hmm. family. And she's an Australian. She came from Australia. And we are still friends today. So, culture was a big shock.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about the culture. And obviously okay. you've had a strong religious background at home. You've
yes.
had like
yes.
a diverse
culture
background.
Yes.
And the language, obviously you've been educated in English. So, you know,
English was fine, but the English you speak in England is different from the English I spoke in Uganda.
Mm.
So I had to adjust to that. I couldn't understand what they were saying. Some of the phrases they used, I had to ask them to repeat. But the girls in the school were already told that I come from Uganda, I am displaced, and they need to be kind to me.
That's wonderful.
So they were all very alert towards that kindness shown to me. Mm. Nobody was slagging worthy. There were a couple of situations, wouldn't want to highlight them, where after they got used to me, and I had very long hair like you, hair down to there, and probably got jealous. So one girl threw salt in my hair, you know.
Oh, gosh.
But did she have the wrath of others on her?
Did she?
Did she?
Oh,
you
gosh.
Know, she never did it again, you know.
Oh, wow.
So things like that. But it was straight away stamped out.
What about community? Because obviously, I mean, were you living there for the whole term, or did you come
yes.
home? And
it was no. I came only twice a term, twice a year, a month. Not a month. Sorry, twice a term. And then I had my school holidays. We were only allowed to telephone my parents at the weekends. Mm. We had to write a letter to them every Sunday. Mm-hmm. So after lunch, we had to sit in our common room and write letters to our parents. And parents can write letters to us. It was strict school. It was a proper girls' school. I was not allowed to run. I had to... we had amazing table manners. We had to learn. So I was used to eating bananas, peel the banana and eat in Africa. Whereas at school, no, we had to peel it and slice it and then eat, quarter our apples and eat, only eat. Heads of the table have to start first and then you start picking up your forks and that. Eating with a knife and fork was the biggest problem for me because I'd never done it. I mean, I'd eaten with spoon, but not the way we eat here. Mm. And to learn that was hard. And breakfast, my menu was different. My food was, you know, had porridge in the morning or we had cooked fruit food. You know, every day it was different. And I didn't like porridge. And the gruel, I used to call it the gruel, you know. I didn't like porridge. I love it now, but I didn't like porridge. And I used to cry. And I was allocated two chaperones, Nikki and Steffi. And they're still my friends. And they looked after me. And they used to, when they used to see that I was upset, they used to pull me on one side at break times and have a chat with me or go off for a walk with me.
Was it mostly homesickness?
Yeah.
Or what were you struggling with?
Missing mum.
What were you feeling? Yeah,
homesickness. What were you feeling most? Severe homesickness.
From mum?
Missing mum and dad and the home life, the freedom.
Uganda.
Uganda and the freedom I had at home.
How did that freedom, how was,
oh, know, it was very freedom disciplined life.
How did it discipline?
Yeah. So the discipline was we got up, the bell went ding, ding, ding in our houses. We had to get up straight away.
So everything was on a strict schedule. And
very
you
strict
that
schedule.
Uganda.
Quarter to eight, 20 to 8, we walked down to, because our house where I lived was about, I would say, a 10-minute walk from the school. So in the morning, had to wash and get up. No baths in the morning, no shower. There was no showers, there was all baths in those days. So no, we had a wash. There was a particular way of washing. You know, I didn't like changing. I was in a dormitory of eight and I didn't want to change in for all the other girls. I was very shy. So I used to get up early at 6 and change in the toilets and then come. But nobody said anything, but they used to just say that, they used to call me Burn at school, not Bernice, Burn. It was always short form, the name. So I said, Burn, you're really shy, aren't you? I wish I was as shy as you. And then they used to make it as a common thing, you know. Eventually, I didn't care.
So they made you feel nice and comfortable. What about faith? Because you're part of a strong Christian community. They greeted you when you came to the UK.
Yeah.
How was that different as, you know, when you arrived? So how did that impact your faith?
It actually got stronger.
And going forward.
It actually got stronger because, you know, there are times when God is the only one you rely on. And my faith got stronger. And the school I went to had strong Christian faith going through. So in the morning, once you get dressed, so 7:20, I remember, the bell would go again and we all have to sit down quietly. We have to be very quiet. No matter what you do, you can be reading your own book. You don't have to read the Bible. But 10 minutes, you have to read the Bible and be very quiet on your bed before you start going to school.
Mm.
So that has stayed with me even today. You know, in the mornings I'm very quiet and I have my quiet time, I call it. And then the bell would go again at 7:30 and you start walking to school. By 7:45, you're at school. Yeah, 60 of us would walk together to school in a crocodile. And then there would be breakfast, and then there would be the lessons, then there would be break, there would be lunch, then there would be lessons in the afternoon, then in the evening it would be tea and supper. And then you walk back to school, to the house, then you would have your chores, whatever they are, prep. prep would be there. So once you're in the seniors, your A-levels, you have to invigilate prep time for the younger ones. So that took place in the house. And then it's the shower rota and the bath. So you had your rota, which days you had to have a bath and everything, wash your hair, etc. So
all very different. How did that sort of impact how you related, coming sort of to the bigger community? You said you were from a big community, so when you came home, would you sort of participate in religious or cultural events? Because you know, your family's from India, so how did that impact your connection sort of changing? And did you sort of keep in touch with other Ugandans, or was it just your immediate family? You know, how was your social life impacted by the move and going obviously to boarding school?
Because I went to a boarding school, I didn't have too much time to think about anything else. Mm. I made new friends, and we all came higgledy-piggledy. All our friends were dispersed. Daksha, my friend who was very close to me, went to India.
Wow.
You know, she didn't come to England. She later on came to England, many years later. So I lost contact with a lot of them, and I made new friends. And my life changed. It went into... My education became very important. I had new friends. And I just accepted the fact that this is how I have to go forward. And I'm living in Sevenoaks. It's a bubble. There were no Indians here. Again, my parents had no Indian friends, but the church family was so supportive. So we made new English friends. And yes, of course they missed their Indian friends. So they used to go frequently to India. Once a year, at least, they went to India and saw all the family. And then slowly, slowly, they started finding friends from Uganda had settled in London, different places. So, you know, my father was in his early 60s when he came, and my mother was late 50s. Mm. So they didn't want to travel too much here, there, everywhere. Mm. But occasionally I can remember they would say to me, oh, so-and-so visited us, and oh, we met here in London. So there were these occasional trips where they had to get together. But far and few between.
So it's like a whole brand new beginning.
Yes.
And you said that, you know, in Uganda, you were, you know, really supported by your mum educationally. Before you came to the UK, prior to arriving in the UK, you know, what sort of aspirations did you have about your future before you had the news that, you know, you were leaving?
None. I was 15, and funnily enough, my parents... because they knew that once I'm 16, they'd have to decide, just like my brother, what they're going to do with the education. So they were toying whether to send me to Britain or to India in a boarding school.
Okay.
You know, so they'd already found a place in Pune, for a boarding place, and they were sort of thinking, you know, what are we going to do? But they kept it very hush-hush from me, because they knew that I might not like the idea of going into a boarding school. So when this happened... There was a big toss-up, because we have a home in India, in Gujarat. And my father said, well, that's where we will go, because we have a home. And my mother said, no, we are going to go to England, even though we don't know where we are going, for Bernice's education. And so, really, I was the driving force for my parents to come to England.
Did your mum sort of go back to teaching when she came to
the UK? No, she never worked after that, because my brother had... my mother had grandchildren.
Yes, you said she was in her late 50s when she came.
Yes,
well.
Yes, yes. And my brother had a son, and then he had two more sons. Wow. And my mother was the main keeper, and my brother and his wife went to work.
And they were also in Sevenoaks.
Yes, they lived here, in this house.
You used to all live together.
Yes.
And what about, when you came to school, how was it easy? You said everything changed, the world changed. What about, how did that impact your education and, you know, where you are right now? How did that send you on your journey? And also,
hugely, I think it was one of the best things that happened to me. I really do believe it was God's grace that he brought me here, and I went to the school that I did because I had an amazing art teacher. And she straight away knew, picked up on my creative ability and my passion. And then I also was quite good at maths. So my maths teacher was pushing me for going into something scientific.
Mm-hmm.
And my art teacher was pushing me into going into that. My passion was art. And so I decided that I'm going to go to art school. But before that, when I landed here and I went to my school and I was enjoying art and everything, within the first 6 months, there was this competition that came up for all schools. And my art teacher said, maybe you should do something for that. Would you like to do something? And I said, okay. So it was a composition. And I said, well, why don't I do a Ugandan village? And so I did a Ugandan village. And I put forward my entry. And, you know, I was highly commended by the Royal Society of Children's Art.
Yeah.
I've still got the whole certificate that I was sent. And my school had never won anything like that in art. So it was like I was a little celebrity then. The school was amazed that I'd won a certificate for the school as well. It was a good thing, you know. The arts is really now becoming big in Waters College. So when I went to Waters College, then it was called Waters Ladies College. I have to say that because they were really made sure that we were brought up as ladies and yes. nothing else, you know. So that took me over, and I loved art, and I spent a lot of time doing it, and I did my A-levels, and then I went and did my foundation course at Rochester, and then I did my degree in textiles and fashion in West Surrey College of Art and Design in Farnham.
And so just, you know, bringing Uganda to your education, sort of sent your education in a totally different direction.
Yes, absolutely.
Just sort of, you know.
Absolutely. But I have vivid pictures of Uganda. It hasn't gone. I mean, recently I did my life's work exhibition in Sevenoaks, and I had to prepare for that. And I prepared, you know, for months for it, and digging out all the old photos. And thankfully, I've got all these photos. And, you know, emotionally, it was a roller coaster for me. It was tough. But it's the first time I have embraced my expulsion in a positive way. I've dabbled into it. But it was the first time. And I think everybody who's left Uganda, and if they have got struggles, they should sit and write about it all and face it. Face it, that this happened to you.
What was your biggest struggle, would you say?
My biggest struggle? I just was sad to leave my pets. I left my dog, my parrot, my bicycle, my home, really.
All the little
I can still cry today. Because it was my home. And I think one of the reasons I have not left this house is because this is my stability. You know, this home gives me stability. So many people said, wouldn't you like to move? And I said, no, this is my stability.
So it still plays a major part in your life.
Yes.
And what about in the way that, you know, we spoke about your work, and how has bring a part of your heritage into your day-to-day life, into Uganda heritage, or the way you brought up your family? You said your husband's not from Uganda as
no.
well, so, you know, have you brought in that with you?
I talk about it a lot.
Life? Yeah.
It doesn't come into my work.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, you wouldn't see it when I, you know, I think my Indian heritage comes a lot out into my work.
Wonderful.
But not so much my life in Uganda. What comes through from Uganda is the diversity. I'm so adaptable with people.
Yes.
I can mix with anybody. And I think that's what's happened to me. Being born in India and lived in Uganda, educated in England, I can talk to anybody. I'm just such an inclusive person. You know, I don't have barriers
yes.
as such. You know, having gone to a church in England, in Uganda, where we were so diverse, worshipping with such a diverse community, I don't have a problem. So I can mix with Africans, I can sit with them on the floor if they're sitting, I can eat with them, I can eat their food, I will eat with Indians and mix with them. And my business that I ran, a lot of which was with Indians, because I worked, I had a lot of embroidery designs that I did, that the artisans in India did it for me, very skilled artisans. And when I used to go and see them, a lot of them were Muslims, so I respected them. And so I used to wear my complete garb to go and see them, because I respected that. So I fit in. I fit in with people, because people are, for me, people are the value, not my work or where I've lived. People is what I deposit my value in. They are the important things.
So all the diversity that you've had from a young childhood, you bring it to, you know, to the table every day, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Isn't that wonderful?
Absolutely. And when I had my exhibition and I had a private view night, my invites were diverse. And through that, I've met some Ugandans, actual Ugandans in Sevenoaks. They are shocked to meet me and I'm shocked to meet them, because they're thinking like, wow, didn't expect a Ugandan in Sevenoaks. And we've built up such a fantastic relationship. And through that, all that relationship building, you know, I know that there's more with Uganda. I've never been back. It has been a real struggle to go back. What is it that's stopping me? I think it is because I don't want to see the new Uganda. I was so happy with where I was. And people say it's changed, and I don't want to see it. But having met this new Ugandan in recently, she said, I'm going to take you back. I am going to take you back. You need to go back and see your house. You need to go and see your schools. And you need to go and embrace it. And I thought, now, I'd like that.
So moving into the future, it's time for a visit to Uganda?
Yes, absolutely. I'm going to go back and I'm going to take my husband Pradeep with me and my sons. One of them is already wanting to come, but I'm not sure about my older son. He has a family, so he's got commitment, but no pressure. Whoever wants to come, but go back and see Uganda as is and see it with joy, not with any remorse or sadness, because we've all moved on and Uganda has moved on. I have moved on. The community in Uganda has moved on. But I hear that there is a new Indian community that has gone and is living there and progressing in a new way. And I believe in progress. And I believe in not looking back with negativity. I believe we've all gone through difficult times. But we are never promised a bed of roses. You know, difficult times will be there everywhere. But you grow in difficult times. I mean, I think I've grown in my difficult times, not in my joyful times. So I've grown, and I'm thankful for the difficult times, because it's those times that I have grown to appreciate what is around me, why it came to me, and where I'm going in the future.
So we've gone full circle, so from a period of joy, round to circle, and now you're going to embrace the Uganda as it is.
Yes.
And I'd like to finish by just, could you remind our listeners again of that one joyous quote that you said your father was said to the night when you prayed together?
Yes, so my father...
That's a wonderful way to end.
My father was given this wonderful verse from the Bible, that when Jacob fled Esau, and Esau had been cheated by Jacob of his inheritance, and he was fleeing, and so Jacob had run away from home, and he was heading somewhere, and he didn't know where he was going, and he fell asleep halfway through, because he was really tired. And God came in a dream to him and said that as you are fleeing, I'm going to be with you. I'm going to be with you. I know what you've done, but I have got a plan and a purpose for you. And so that's how we came here. And we are still in this home. We are still being blessed. We are still being used by the community. I mean, I'm very involved with the church here in Sevenoaks. I'm still reaching out to the community in different ways, wherever I can. And I at the end of this month, I've been very, very kindly invited by the Jinja Indian community to go and be with their chief guest. So hopefully I can reach out to them and share with them what God has done in this land for me, for my family, and is still going to do. And I don't believe anybody who lives a joyful life cannot be used by God, because he's there for everybody. God loves us all. We are his children.
Absolutely.
He loves us all.
That's so beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing your journey with me. I value all that I've learnt today, and I'm sure our listeners will also listen to your message with joy and hope, and the roller coaster that you've been through, and as I said, ending again once more with happiness and joy with your visit to Jinja.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for this opportunity to be able to share. And I'm so glad that this whole organization is there, because this is history. This is part of British history that we all need to hear and know about. And we are so diverse, aren't we? Which is wonderful.